Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
Wish it was Sunday.
Another pleasant valley Sunday.
Sunday came, trashed me out again.
Wake up!
Good morning, and we're in trouble.
Life, health, home, travel, and more. Life Matters, brought to you by Mercy Health, a passion for making lives better.
Is the laugh button working?
Good, all right, here we go. In 3, 2, 1.
Life Matters is on your radio, Lake 96.1.
Welcome to Life Matters. Philip and I had quite the lovely discussion about family traditions. Tom, how about your traditions? Do you have certain things you guys do on Thanksgiving? Or
we eat turkey,
right? That's about the extent.
Pretty much
of ours.
Get together and hang
we
out.
Play cards.
Yeah, I don't think
we do some
we
interactive
have a tradition.
Stuff.
It, when I was a kid, everybody showed up. We had my mom would do both sides of the family.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So it was busy.
Yeah, a lot of people. A
lot of activity.
Yeah.
That's you know as time goes on things change, so we don't have. It's not that busy anymore.
Do you think this year that people will be, do you think more people will be getting together?
You know, I understand your question, and my answer is I don't think it's going to change because I know the people who live in COVID fear aren't changing anything, so they're not going to that stuff. For us, it's not going to change.
Right.
You know, for Amy and I, it's going to be the same.
Like, we didn't change anything in
right.
our house.
Yeah, no.
Well, but ours changes. That's because ours changes every year depending on who has kids and where they're going. And,
right.
You know, like this year, because the kids are going to be at two of the grandkids are going to be at other grandparents for Christmas. And then my other granddaughter is at her dad's this year for Christmas because that switches every other year or whatever. And so we're actually going to do like Chrisgiving or Thanksmas or whatever you want to call it.
Well, you know,
do it all at once.
For, God, I don't know, 27 years or close to it, we had no holiday tradition in my house.
Yeah.
Because I usually wasn't home. I was working.
Ah.
You know, so it was kind of all dumped on Amy.
Right.
And we would show up wherever Thanksgiving dinner was.
Right.
So, yeah, for the longest time, we didn't have one.
Because you couldn't.
Right.
Right. Well, now you can.
Yes.
Are you doing anything new with the grandkids? Like, well, you guys just do the outside stuff all the time. You're outside with
yeah,
the
they're
kids.
Over weekly usually.
Yeah,
not
so you
every
do
week,
anything,
but
you do stuff
quite
anyway.
A bit. Yeah. But you know, with my son in law enforcement now, we have the same issue with him.
Uh-huh.
So that has changed a little bit. My other son and his wife were both Walmart employees for years, so we rarely saw them on Thanksgiving. They were
right.
working.
Right.
Maybe it's something that I started. I don't know. But they both moved on to other employment. So, yeah, this year, I think it'll be the first time we should have everybody there.
That'll be nice.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
And Charlotte and Jean come over, our
yeah,
neighbors.
The next door neighbors. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. They're like family. They are family.
They are
at this
family
point.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if
awesome.
They like it, but they are.
Well, they keep coming over for
that's
the free
right.
meals.
They keep coming back.
Darn it.
Yeah, no, they're good people. We got very lucky.
Yeah, so how's deer season this year? Like, what happens? Tell me the dates of all of that. The deer, like,
well,
when do you guys
for the
all
gun season, it
go,
starts,
quote, up north?
Well, everybody is different, but the season starts the morning of November 20th, Saturday, and
okay.
then it runs until the following Sunday.
So next Saturday?
Correct.
Oh, I bet you guys are excited.
I am, yeah.
And goes it's till when?
Till the following Sunday.
It's only
so,
a week?
9 days.
Why is that?
Ask
Why is
DNR,
it so short?
I don't know. I have no answer for you.
Huh.
They just don't like us hunting, I guess. I don't know.
That's weird.
But there's, you know, there's other seasons, too, because you have bow season and
right.
black powder season. And then
what's black powder season?
Black powder rifle.
Okay.
It's the old stuff.
Okay.
And then there's a lot of times we have holiday hunts. So you can go out hunting again,
okay.
but they're limited, like it's antlerless.
Then you're only allowed to bag a certain number of animals?
Depending on your area. Everybody in the state gets a buck tag.
Okay.
And then you can apply for a antlerless permit, which is for doe. Depending on the area you're hunting in, there are limited amounts of permits for that.
Okay.
So, yeah, it all depends on where you're hunting and what they have available. There's areas where you can get multiple antlerless permits.
Hmm.
And that's where the herd is pretty heavy and they're trying to thin it out more.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. It's strategic, right?
Right. It all depends, and it changes every year. The DNR keeps their eye on what's going on. You know, they go to their informants in the woods and they figure it out and set down the law for us to follow.
The deer are in the woods going, no, no, not here, not this year. That's who they talk to. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I always feel, too, like hunters, you know, you guys go out and you put up your stands and you get all prepared and all of this. And I always feel like it's like a big secret on where you're going. And
absolutely.
Like there's some kind of, like you're not allowed to tell anybody else where you're.
Go talk to a fisherman about where do I catch good fish? Go out on the lake. I'm not telling you. You know, we all have our little things that work.
Uh-huh.
You know, quirky or not, we have our area that works or the way we do things that works for us. And we don't pass it on because we want it to work for us.
Right.
I'll pass it on to my kids, but.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I've met
your
kids.
We are very, very fortunate. My family has property up north, so I go to the same place every year. I know exactly where I'm hunting. I know how the deer are moving. Like, my youngest son is coming up for the first time in several years, and I know exactly where I want to put him, where he has his best chances, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
But we all have our own thing that we do.
Right. Yeah,
but
I feel like it's this private secret club, and nobody's allowed to know where anybody else's stuff is.
It's
and
not that crazy, but, you know, as far as our hunting party, we all know where everybody's going.
Right. Well, you
but
should.
We have so our favorite areas.
Hurt each other. I mean, that's
The
other thing is you got to.
Right.
Yeah. So do you have to wear? What are the rules on the orange and the camouflage and 50% the
50% orange.
Okay.
You can wear pink now too.
Do you wear pink or orange?
I wear orange. I think everybody knew the answer to that question before you asked.
I don't know.
It.
You had pink handcuffs when you were just saying.
Well, there's a story behind those.
That was more about the criminal than the.
I still have those pink handcuffs.
I'm sure. That's more about the criminal than the cop, though. So.
Well, it started out between myself and Chief Rasmussen, but that's a story for another time.
It is a story for another time. So, okay, so 50% orange or pink and 50% camo.
No, so, you can go straight orange. The camouflaged orange just helps break it up, and it helps you blend into the wood setting better. That's what camouflage is.
Right.
It breaks up your silhouette.
Right.
So I've been told deer are colorblind. So everything is gray to them.
Hmm.
That's what I've been told. But even, you know, a guy orange.
Now, how do they know that?
I have no idea.
How in the world
would
they
know?
How
do you know when a dog is dreaming?
I don't know.
I don't either. Yeah, I don't know how they figured that. I don't know how they figured deer are colorblind. I've never asked one. If you're in all one color, you're going to stand out.
Sure.
Doesn't matter what color that is. So with the camouflage on your orange or your pink, it just breaks it up a little bit and you blend into the woods better. That's all it is.
Right. Well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
What about the smell stuff?
It's real.
So,
they can wind you or they can smell you.
Well, don't you put like deer pee on you or something?
No, I do not cover myself in deer pee. No. Yeah, urine is used to attract bucks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not on your person because it's going to bring them to you. You put it up in a perimeter around your stand and let it work as a bait to bring them in. There's a bunch of things. There's drips and stuff
like
that that
like
people use.
So there's not like deer cologne that you wear to get them to come to your
no.
or to cover up your own human scent.
Yeah, no. But, you know, everybody has their own thing they do. There is scent-free soap that you can use for your body. Wash yourself on that. You can use scent-free detergent to break down the scent of your clothing. I've found that it doesn't really matter. If you put up a good stand, you watch your wind, and you have your area set up appropriately, you're watching your trails and all that, and you do some research, you should be successful.
Do you have cameras?
I don't use them.
I know some people that have trail cameras, and
they
watch them all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the point in seeing what's happening if you're not there?
Right. They're kind of cool because it lets you know what's out there. But at the same time, we put cams up 1 year. A buddy of mine put them up, and there was some really nice-looking bucks on them, and we did not see them for the season.
Right,
and
so doesn't that just make you disappointed?
Wrong?
Yeah,
it does. So I'd rather go do old school. Go out there, do my research. Where do I want to put my stand? What trails are they using? Set up my stand. get some firing lanes established, and sit down and relax. And that's, you know, one of the big things about deer hunting is that relaxation. You get out in the woods, it's not high excitement. It's 98% boredom with about a 5% excitement when that deer comes in.
See, here's my problem is that I would sit in the deer stand and go through the Rolodex of things that I know that I should be doing instead of just sitting there waiting for a wild animal to cross my path.
Yeah, you
I would
and every
not
other
be
hunter.
Able to. Yeah, but I would not be able to relax.
Oh, I've designed stuff on the race car. I've redid things at my house, sitting up in that stand, thinking about, you know, whatever. It's a great time to just sit. You're
That's
in the middle
true.
Of the woods. You're surrounded by nature.
Oh, you know, I understand the appreciation. I absolutely do.
One of the coolest things I ever saw, deer hunting, it was snowing, and I'm just kind of looking around, and I can hear the snowflakes hitting the ground 10 feet below me. And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is
nice to be in that kind of quiet.
Yeah.
I feel
great.
That same way at night at my house when you go out and sit by the lake or go out and sit at the very end of the pier and, you know, at like 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
and there's no, it's just the water, and once in a while a fish will jump, and you know, but it's.
Yeah, we get the coyotes.
Well,
moving
thank
on.
You for the lesson, because I'm not a hunter. My husband's not a hunter. He just never. That's not. He just didn't grow up doing that. And I'm always interested in the desire. Like people are, like it's like the start of a race, and your toes are on the starting line, and you're ready to go. And as soon as the clock strikes. At whatever time deer season starts, none of you guys are anywhere to be found.
No, I'm in my stand before 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's dark 30 when I leave the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for us, again, we're very fortunate, but you got to know where you're going because it's hard to find camouflage things in the dark.
Sure.
So, you know.
Well, and
that's the
one
first
more
challenge
question.
Of the day.
One more question. So, if you have like a 3 or 4 day hunting trip planned and you get your deer on the first day within hours of getting up in your stand, what do you do the rest of the time?
I refuse to answer that question on the grounds that it may incriminate me.
So last week, Tom Gardner came in and I talked to him a little bit. He couldn't come in today because he had a family commitment today. So I went ahead and recorded an interview with him last week. You were off actually putting up that deer stand or doing something crazy.
Yeah, I was committed to an up north trip.
Yeah. So coming up next, my interview with Tom Gardner, just to update us on what's going on with him from GKWW Law, who is a sponsor of Life Matters, by the way. I asked him some legal questions about the Rittenhouse case. Just some general law questions, not even really specific about the Rittenhouse case. That is coming up next, right after this, right here on Life Matters on Lake 96.1.
Life Matters continues on Lake 96.1.
Welcome back to Life Matters. Tom Gardner joins us this morning. How are you, sir?
Good. Glad to be here.
Good. You surviving the fall, get looking forward to the holidays?
I'm looking forward to it, yes.
How are things going at the office? Let's start with that.
Oh, we're really busy.
Good.
Yeah, it's a growth time for us. We've had a lot of good cases and a lot of good work and new clients, and we've been adding people, so it's been a really strong time, surprisingly, to us. I never really expected that was going to be the result of COVID-type time period.
Right. Well, did you slow down during COVID?
We did not slow down, even though I anticipated we would slow down. But in the injury area, that's where there's going to be problems, because personal injury cases, where we represent the injured party in those cases, those cases are so delayed in so many jurisdictions that people won't get justice or results, in some cases, for years. So, for example, in Chicago, realistically, there won't be jury trials for cases until 2023, probably, for the most part.
Because of COVID?
Because of the huge backlog of cases caused by COVID.
Caused by COVID. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're not still under those protocols. They're moving forward with jury trials?
They're moving forward with jury trials, but most things are still done remotely via Zoom, which isn't necessarily bad.
Right.
But getting to trial is an issue, so there are a limited number of jury trials that are taking place, not just in Chicago.
Right.
That's happening. I have cases in New Jersey. California is incredibly backed up. In Los Angeles, they are extremely slow in both state and federal court. So around the country, courts are backed up, more backed up in the metro areas than in the more rural or exurban areas.
Sure. Let's talk about generally, because obviously we don't have an outcome. Obviously, we only know what's happened up until now. But let's I have some lawyer questions about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. And I know you're not involved in the trial and you've got your own stuff you're working on. And so it's not like you've been watching it, you know, moment by moment. But there's definitely been some things that have happened that are curious with regard to some of the conduct and some of the way that the prosecution has acted and even some of the things that the judge has done that, you know, we have some questions about whether or not that's a normal thing. So one of my questions is the defense asked for a mistrial because of things that the prosecutor asked that he was told not to ask about long before the trial started. And not only that, but it's pretty cut and dry that you are not supposed to ask about these things. And that was Kyle Rittenhouse's silence after the incident until the trial. He has a right to that. And when and the judge was upset because when you question Kyle, the witness, when you question the suspect about his silence between the time that the incident happened and the time that he's at trial, it can make the jury think that there's something, you know, not right about that. But you have a right to remain silent. That is your right to remain silent. They tell you that right away. Tell me what your feelings about asking for that mistrial based on that and about the right to remain silent and how that can affect the jury when you question why he's been quiet.
Well, I think it's one of the most fundamental tenets of criminal law.
Right.
That you have the right to remain silent. Every person in the country knows this from every TV show that relates to crime.
Exactly.
If you go to MeTV, you could listen to the Dragnet show, and they were doing that in the 1940s or 50s or whenever that show ran.
Well, the judge even said that. This is 40, 50 years of basic law.
Right, right. And so what happened here was there was probably a motion in limine filed by the defense. That means it's a motion to limit testimony.
Right.
And the judge granted that motion. That would be a standard motion for the defense to say the prosecutor can't inquire about his Rittenhouse remaining silent. So even if there wasn't a motion filed in that case, the prosecutor should know you don't question about someone being silent.
Right.
Now, they can open the door conceivably in the case, but they hadn't done that yet in this case. So that's a very serious matter when that happens. Now, my understanding is the judge immediately stopped that questioning. Mm-hmm. And then the question, if this were to ever be in the appellate court, would be, is the question itself sufficiently prejudicial so that he was not provided with a fair trial? That's the real issue for a mistrial.
Right.
So the judge could grant the mistrial. The appellate court would probably uphold that if the judge were to do that. It's a serious violation. The judge could grant it without it's not a situation where it would be a frivolous granting.
Right.
That would be my guess, not being in the courtroom, but that'd be my guess. Now, whether it would be with prejudice that the whole case would be over because of that, I generally would doubt that, mm-hmm. that would end the case forever based on one question.
Right.
There's plenty of cases where improper questions are asked, and generally the courts allow a curative instruction.
Sure.
Sometimes the concern with the curative instruction is it highlights
exactly.
the very question that you're worried about.
Exactly.
So
keeps it top of mind.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
Right.
So those are strategic things because sometimes the judges will say to the defense, do you want me to give a curative instruction? And the defense will say, I don't know about that.
Right.
Because that will create a problem. But for the record's sake, most defense attorneys will say yes, and then argue later that wasn't good enough.
Right.
You know, we'll still object.
And he did ask for it. He did ask for the mistrial with prejudice, which I think people don't always know what that means. And that what that means is that with prejudice means you cannot come back and start over. And I think that's what the general public who were paying attention noticed, was that at the time of this, it was just such an obvious thing, really, to people watching. This trial was not going well for the prosecutor at this point in time. It's just not going well. And he, it appeared, and it appeared the judge was trying to make sure he understood that if you are not going to get a mistrial in this courtroom, so you can start over again. And it did appear that he was maybe trying to tick off the judge enough that a mistrial gets declared and he gets to start over because it was not going well for them. And why would you want, even in a jury trial, why would you want to tick off the judge? I mean, the judge was not just, he didn't just admonish him, he yelled at him. You know better. This is basic law, that you have absolutely no excuse for this behavior in any courtroom, let alone this one. I mean, he was angry. Why would you want to tick off a judge by going down that path when you knew darn well you shouldn't be going down that path?
Well, in this case, I can't explain that. I don't think there's any reason that you would want to tick off the judge.
Right.
You know, there are circumstances where you might ask a question that you think is on the edge because you want to have the jury think about that
exactly.
question a little bit. And you also are relying on the other side to make an objection or not make an objection. Sometimes you'll ask a question as a lawyer and the other side won't object.
Right.
They're thinking about it differently than you're thinking about it. They think that could be good for us to have that question. So for borderline cases, borderline questions, well, that would make sense. Now, why he would ask that question and get the judge upset in front of a jury, I think that's extremely dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more dangerous, actually, with a jury than with a bench trial where it's just the judge.
Now, why is that? Why do you think? Because I would think that you just wouldn't want to do anything to, I mean, you would just want to watch your behavior in front of the jury. But no, the judge is a big time at play here.
Yeah, the reason is that judges have to have short memories. They've seen lawyers do things that are improper, and they can put things out of their mind.
Right.
Right? So if the question, if there's a Fifth Amendment question raised, the judge will say, you know, that's a bad question. I'm ignoring that and go forward. And the judge can easily ignore it.
Right.
All right? The judge is trained to ignore that.
Right.
So in a bench trial, you know, you can ask questions and it's not going to have that prejudicial impact on a judge.
Right.
But before a jury hears a question, the jurors are not thinking in terms of evidence or constitutional law.
Right.
They're just making their determination. They're taking everything in and they can take in the fact, well, he didn't even say anything. I would have said something in that circumstance.
Right.
If I was innocent, I would have said something. So despite the 50 years or more, I'd say, of jurisprudence on this, the fact is that there's still a large number of people that would say, well, if I was innocent, I would have said something.
Why would you play your hand before you get in front of the most important people, which is the jury?
Well, not just that. I mean, that, you're right. The advice is always say nothing about this case.
Exactly.
We'll go to trial. It's not just that you're playing your hand early. It's also that other people you talk to may understand what you said differently, and all of a sudden they're a witness against you.
Right.
Something changes and in the relationships or whatever, and now they're saying, oh, no, that witness said this to me, or that defendant said this to me, or that plaintiff actually said this.
Right.
And it wasn't even said.
Yeah.
So that's the same danger exists with communications with the press,
mm-hmm.
because things can be taken out of context or whatever.
The media? What? The media changes the... Oh, I don't know about that.
So in those rare occasions...
Right.
Not the radio media, because they always get everything right.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No, I'm not a fan of the media, as you know. I'm, you know, the media has, you know, the Kyle was smart to say nothing because it wouldn't have mattered what he said. They would have screwed it up. It doesn't matter what he would have said. To never say anything about anything, and that's really hard to do. That's really hard to do, to not have anything leaked out that you've said or done or whatever. And he really hasn't, except for a couple of instances. Aren't we supposed to just be identifying and trying to decide exactly what was going on at the time he pulled the trigger all three times?
That's right. Yes. But other things can come into play in cases. And sometimes the prosecutor will believe that additional information will kind of dirty up the defendant.
Sure.
And so they'll try to introduce that evidence in one way, directly, indirectly, however it can be. But you're right, the focus really should be on the moments of the alleged offense and what the response was. Now, one of the elements of the offense is intent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the argument often is these other things show his intent. Now, one of the things that I think relate to the motion in limine or the restriction that the judge talked about was whether he had made statements or something earlier in time about another incident.
Right.
And whether that went to the kind of intent that he had at the time of these events.
Right.
Now, the standard there is whether the prior incident is more prejudicial than probative, whether it's more harmful to the person, so overwhelmingly harmful to the person, as opposed to whether it proves something.
Right.
And often other acts evidence or other incident type evidence is so prejudicial.
Right.
That it's excluded.
Interesting. Interesting. We're talking with Tom Gardner, GKWWlaw.com. If you are interested or need some legal advice is where you want to go for their firm. So, one of the things that you talked about not ticking off the judge, one of the things, though, that also happened that I'm curious about, when Kyle Rittenhouse got on the stand, at one point his attorneys were asking about when these guys were coming at him. And he is clearly suffering from PTSD from this incident, which who wouldn't? Right. But he got overwhelmed with emotion and you could just lots of people say he was acting. Anybody who says that he was acting doesn't have kids, because as a mom, that I don't know how you fake hyperventilating. He was not faking this overwhelming fear that came back up when he was trying to answer questions about the moment that he had a gun pointed at him when the guy was hitting him with the skateboard. He got very emotional. The judge handed him a bottle of water and called for a break. Now, and the jury saw that. Now, the media has been calling into question some of the judge's behavior, you know, admonishing the prosecutor the way he did, which actually, again, my opinion, 100% my opinion, that guy deserved. That prosecutor deserved it at that point in time. He was completely out of line. The judge had been patient with him, lost his patience. He deserved what he got. So the jury also saw the judge almost like comforting the defendant by handing him the bottle of water and then calling for the break so that he could calm down and continue with his testimony. Do all of these things play into this decision of credibility with the jury?
I think everything counts. It counts in different degrees. You get different people taking things different ways. There are circumstances in trials where, as a lawyer, you think something's not important because you're thinking in terms of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, if you talk to the jury afterwards, they'll point out things and you thought, that I never even thought about that.
Right.
It can go from the condition of someone's clothing to how they talk, how they walk, who's present in the courtroom with them.
Uh-huh.
All those things actually come into play. The jury takes in everything. You have 12 people taking in a lot of information. So I think that any time anything happens in court, it can have significance. It's not unusual for a judge to call a recess for somebody who's becoming emotionally overwhelmed. And it's not unusual for a judge to have a clerk or someone, a deputy sheriff, give water to a witness. I didn't see the actual incident when he's giving the water to him. Jurors can take it different ways.
Right.
If it was a plaintiff's personal injury case and a judge gave water to the, say, the wife of somebody that died in a car accident or something, that would be normal.
Right.
Here you have a high-profile case. Often judges will say, we're going to take a break right now and then let the person get their composure.
Right.
But this judge didn't do that.
Yeah. I think that he's a really good judge for this case because he's been very considerate. I think he's been very fair. But he's also been very determined to make sure it's fair. And he seems unaffected by the press being there, by the media coverage, by the, you know, I think that this is probably how his courtroom goes. Cameras or no cameras, and I think that he's been a really good judge for this case. He's put his foot down when he needed to, and that's, you've got to control your courtroom, right? You've got, that's what their job is. They've got to control what goes on. They've got to make sure that what's supposed to be in there isn't, or is in there, and what's not supposed to be in there isn't in there. It'll be interesting to see the closing arguments, I know, but my question is, in a case like this, given the circumstances, do you think this jury should have been sequestered?
It's not that long of a trial.
True.
Right?
True.
So judges prefer not to sequester jurors because it's a big burden on jurors to begin with.
Right.
They're leaving their jobs, their families, etc. But you do have a high-profile case here. Short period of time, if you factor things in, it might be better to sequester jurors in this circumstance. It's a media circus type situation.
It is.
And it also, because of the nature of the case and other high profile cases, it actually puts more pressure on the people. You know, they have to worry about people following them and doing all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Which, so, they had an incident of somebody videotaping the jury on their phone coming out of the courtroom, and the police had to get the guy and make sure that the video was deleted. They actually had that happen. And so you're right. I mean, that's, and given the media coverage and how completely biased and opinionated the media can be when they're reporting news lately, you know, the effect that that could have on the jury, and how much pressure is the jury feeling right now about their decision and its impact on the community and potential more riots and potential more looting? Because I'll tell you this, there was a news report on Friday that the city of Chicago has called off days off for police officers in anticipation of this verdict and potential, if he gets acquitted, potential protests in Chicago over this. So given all of that kind of pressure, maybe the jury should have been sequestered for this short amount of time so they weren't as exposed to that until after the verdict. I don't know. Like, how do you feel about that?
Well, I generally would favor sequestering them in this case, I think. It's almost a service to the jurors in a way.
Yeah.
That's not the trend. The trend is to allow jurors to go home, enjoy themselves a little bit in between, take their mind off what's going on. But in a high attention case like this, might serve them better for 2 weeks to not be going home.
Right. I mean, have you ever had an open and shut case where you walk in and you really think, you know, this is all laid out. There's really not a lot of you know, counter issues here. There, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of gray area. This is pretty black and white. And then walked in and everything turned gray and woo, everything went out the window that you thought about the case. Does that happen?
That definitely happens.
Because I don't know. I think this prosecutor, I can't see how he walked in thinking that this was going to be a win for him. My personal opinion is he's closing on a house far, far away and isn't going to have to live here after this case because he's never going to live this down. Some of his behavior has, you know, in the general public's sense of decency has just been, you know, like the Fifth Amendment thing. Okay, standard operating procedure for normal human beings knows you have a right to remain silent. Right? Just like you said,
right.
You turn on any police show and that's the first thing you hear. He appears condescending. He appears, I don't know, if I was a juror, I would not like him. And I think that's a problem, obviously. You've got to be likable, right? And I think they should have been sequestered. I don't know that they should have allowed any media in the courtroom. Who decides that?
The judge.
Yeah.
And there are rules that relate to media in the courtroom, too.
Of course.
So, you know, that area has changed quite a bit over time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go back 25 years, really media was very limited, maybe 20 years. And
wasn't the O.J. Simpson trial basically the first trial that was...
There probably were other ones, but California was one of the first states to open that up.
Right.
Because before that time, sketch artists made a living
right.
of being at courthouses.
Yep.
And so you'd turn on the news and all you would see is a sketch of whoever it may be, O.J. Simpson,
right.
if it was pre-O.J. Simpson.
Right, right.
But you'd see the sketches and sketch artists would sit in the front row and they'd be sketching away.
Uh-huh. I mean, this community in particular has already been through enough. Obviously. However, people will tell you, police officers, law enforcement will tell you, Kyle shut those riots down. If you recall, after this incident, it all stopped. And so there are people who really believe that he was 100% in the right. As a mom, don't think he should have ever been there, regardless of his training, regardless of what he knew, which again, this wasn't a kid that was dropped in the middle of downtown Kenosha with no experience and an AR-15. And this kid knew what he was doing. He'd been trained. He'd been trained by authorities, by professionals. He was on a career path to first responder occupation in some way, shape, or form. Luckily, that was the case. So he didn't, you know, he had some situational awareness in spite of the fact that he was in an area that he probably, again, at 17 years old, he's a kid, shouldn't have been there. But it'll be interesting to see, again, no matter what the verdict is, the reaction across the nation on whether or not people have learned their lesson about looting and rioting and protesting and the differences between protesting and criminal behavior. I don't know. I think that this jury, you got to say a little prayer for them because what kind of pressure are they under? You know, this kid's life is at stake. You know, the community is at stake. I mean, there's a lot weighing on these folks. And I think that the public is also going to be surprised because I think I think in everybody's eyes on either side, this is open and shut. The people who think that he's committed a crime. It's murder. He killed someone. It doesn't matter the circumstances. He killed someone. They're dead. That's it. He's a murderer. But then there's other people saying, nope, absolutely not. Self-defense. This is black and white. And like you just said, nothing is black and white. You can walk in and get blindsided by anything in a trial.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Trials are full of surprises.
Mm-hmm. But that's the fun of being a lawyer, right?
It is.
Is overcoming it's those challenges.
Fun. Yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
That is
and
true.
Having the ability to deal with the changes
mm-hmm.
is what makes a good lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the jury is human. And whether somebody objects to something, it's already been said. It's like putting toothpaste back in the tube. And so there's going to be a lot of things in these closing arguments and things like that that I believe the prosecution is going to try and put toothpaste back in the tube a little bit. Like you said, once you hear that, you can't unhear things. You can't unsee things. You can't unfeel things because the jury is human.
That's right.
And you just never know what to expect from them.
That's right. Well, and this trial has proceeded pretty rapidly.
Yes, it has.
You know, so that's probably good.
Yes. They're,
as opposed to a case taking 4 years.
Thanks for joining us this morning and just answering some of these general questions because in layperson's terms, sometimes, you know, again, the with prejudice, without prejudice, things like that. People don't, they get confused, and, you know, sometimes just those little things are nice to know. Can the jury come back and just be deadlocked?
Sure.
On this one?
That happens, sure. Then there'd have to be a retrial. Yeah, but they could be deadlocked, sure.
I just don't think that's going to happen. But they have to, but the prosecution has to convince all the entire jury, correct?
That's correct.
So all 12 of them have to either agree that he's guilty, and if one of even one of them says, I just don't feel it, it's done. He's acquitted.
Yeah, well, eventually it would be, yes, a hung jury if they can't reach a decision.
Right.
And they can go out to the judge and say, Judge, we can't reach a decision. And the judge may say, deliberate. There's some instructions. Sometimes they can give the jury about the need to deliberate and how the system prefers to have a decision reached. But people, you know, you can have a juror hold out one way or the other, guilty, not guilty, and then the case can be mistried. And there are dramatic movies about the strong juror who holds out against all odds and that sort of thing. And that happens.
It happens. But they can. But they have to be. They have to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt.
That's the standard.
Right.
That's the United States standard in every criminal case.
But reasonable is subject to interpretation.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But the idea is that beyond a reasonable doubt is stronger than like 51% to 41%.
Right.
The feather on the scales, that works for civil cases. That does not work for criminal cases.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Tom, thanks for joining us this morning.
It's my pleasure. Right. It's a very interesting case, so I'm happy to talk about that case.
Absolutely. 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 Well, we will see you next month.
Sounds good.
If you need the services of Tom's Law Firm, it's GKWW, right?
Yes. Gardner, Koch, Weisberg, and Rona.
I try to remember the GKWW so that I can do the website correctly. GKWWlaw.com. Go on there. Offices in Illinois, Wisconsin. You guys pretty much take care of everything.
Yeah, we're right on Commercial Court in Lake Geneva.
Tom, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Life Matters continues on Lake 96.1.
Welcome back to Life Matters. All right, Tom, we figured out that we're going to start calling this segment, I Have a Question.
And I Have an Answer.
Oh, I don't know if you're going to have answers to all my questions.
Well, I'll have an answer. It might not be a good one.
You might have some questions yourself.
I'm sure I will.
Right. So we're going to call this, I have a question. So I have, my first question is, do you know the difference between immunized and vaccinated?
Well, I thought I did. But I believe I'm wrong because if I'm not mistaken, vaccinated means you are completely protected from whatever that is, polio, measles, whatever.
I don't think you're completely protected. Maybe more protected.
Okay, more protected.
Because look at all the people that have been vaccinated against COVID.
Well, that's where I was
going
to go with
it. Exactly.
Because an immunized is, well, this will help.
Right.
So vaccinated is, when I hear vaccinated, I believe I'm protected.
Right.
And I won't get polio or the measles
smallpox
or shingles
or
the flu or COVID or whatever.
But I don't think that that is... First of all, I don't think that's ever been true, but I think that we are learning a lot from Aaron Rodgers about this. This the most unlikely person you would learn from.
Yeah.
So, do you feel like he deceived people?
I don't think he deceived anybody any worse than we've all been deceived by the press and the government.
Right.
I you know, I don't know all the ins and outs about it, but my understanding is he said, I never said I was vaccinated.
No, he didn't.
He said, I felt I was immunized by using whatever he was using.
Right. Right. He's been taking ivermectin, I think, and some, you know.
So,
and actually, I got to tell you something. He's been taking, except for ivermectin, the exact same thing that my doctor told me to take this entire time.
Really?
Yeah. Of course, I've had COVID. So when I say I'm immune...
Because you've had it already.
It's because I have a natural immunity to it. Plus the fact that, like I said, I've been doing things just like Aaron Rodgers, to build up my immune system and to make it stronger itself. So, and that's not just because, that's also because I don't want the flu. You know, right. I don't want this. I don't want any of this stuff right now because I don't want to go to any medical facility. I love Mercy. They're a sponsor. You know, I love them. But I don't really want to go there. And they really don't want me to come there.
And beyond that, God forbid if you cough in public.
I know. When I hear the word vaccinated, that's shot in the arm to me. Period. End of story. It doesn't matter what the protection is. That means vaccinated. He never said that.
No, he didn't.
And regardless of anything, regardless of what he's doing, what he said, absolutely any of it, it's none of my business. And I think that that's the problem here, is that it was really nobody's business except the people who were immediately surrounding him. Now, it was my understanding that the Packers were making him follow, quote, unvaccinated person protocol, testing and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not really sure why the Packers got fined. I didn't read into that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of information that's unknown, definitely unknown to me about that. But yeah, if your group knows where you're at and are fine with it, I don't see the problem. I don't feel we have the right to know people's medical history unless it's a medically related issue.
Right.
You know,
And he was asymptomatic. He just tested positive. It's not like he was super sick. Right.
Right.
So even if you've been vaccinated, you can still test positive and be asymptomatic. I mean, that's the whole point behind getting the vaccine is that if you get it, hopefully you don't get it. But if you do, your symptoms and your illness is supposed to be less serious. So
doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't make sense.
No.
It just doesn't make sense. And again, I go back to I don't understand why it's anybody's business. Like, for instance, there's a law enforcement Facebook page. It's a kind of a national law enforcement page. And there's been officers that have died of COVID and they keep saying that. You know, like they keep posting this. We lost this officer. They died from complications from COVID and all this. I don't think that's any of my business.
I don't either.
I mean, I say a little prayer, mourn the loss of anybody. But I don't think it's any of my business how they died. And I wish that we could stop. You know, this word is like has to be in every conversation. And I don't think it does. I mean,
no, I wish it would
it's
not going to go away because it's still an issue. But yeah, let's get off the bandwagon. Let's get back to normal life.
Well, I mean, there's taking precaution. Okay, absolutely. You know, we should be taking precautions. We should be watching out. We should be keeping an eye on things and, you know, not doing stupid things. But I think at this point, we all have a handle on what we should and shouldn't be doing. It's just all not, there's something about all of it that's not sitting right at this point after all of this time. Like, we all know how to manage our health and we all know what our options are. And we all know what the consequences may be, you know, the consequences of not getting a flu shot, the consequences of not perhaps vaccinating yourself against shingles. We all know what the consequences would be. It's the same as COVID. Like, it's all the same consequence. You could die from the pneumonia, from getting the flu. You could die. So how long is it going to be before people stop trying to control the story? I think that you should be allowed to do what you for your body, what you know is right, without repercussion. I mean, in Aaron Rodgers' case, he's allergic to ingredients in a couple of those vaccines and just didn't feel like the risk appropriate.
You brought up a few weeks ago with that gentleman from the TV station being fired because his body couldn't handle ingredients in the COVID shot.
Right.
Nobody cares.
And
you know, it's all about
my
agenda, and you will follow it. And they don't care about the repercussions. It's just not right.
It's just not right.
Yeah.
You know, if your health professional looks at you and says, you really need to get this vaccine, like I am strongly suggesting, then take the advice, but do it. But even if he says that and you say no, I also think that the health professional, and I can tell you, my health professional at Mercy did say, I understand how you feel. I understand what how you think about this and where you're coming from. And so let's just work with your theory for now. And if things change or we feel like, you know, the vaccination becomes something that you definitely need or it's going to be an issue,
make
we'll talk about
decision.
It later. Let's take this step by step. And so, you know, because that's what good health care provides is A, options, and B, thought and consideration.
What bothers me is that people that get the vaccine and are living in fear, and I say it like that, not as a shot, but best way to describe it, expect me to respect their decisions. And I do.
Absolutely
do. You want to be vaccinated? You want to wear a mask all the time? I totally respect that.
Right.
But why won't you respect my decisions? And that's what bothers me more than anything else.
Right. I think we all have to figure out a way to integrate everybody's opinion in this.
Yeah.
However, I still say it's nobody's business.
I totally agree.
I don't know who in my office is vaccinated or not vaccinated. I have no idea. I will never, it would never cross my mind to require my staff to get injected with something that they may not agree with. I have no idea. It's none of my business. That is their life and their family, and they are not threatening this business or other employees or anything in this office, and it is none of my business.
Right.
And I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea, nor do I plan to find out, nor do I plan to enforce anything. And what's the difference between companies with 100 employees and companies with 10 employees?
Nothing.
Like the virus knows. Like it knows.
Well, it only
not
goes after the big company.
Well, and it knows not to go to Walmart.
Right. Right.
But the little, you know, sundry store that the local guy owns, it could go in there.
I think
none of it makes sense is what I'm saying.
It doesn't.
It's so hard.
I think one of the biggest things coming out of this, is just me personally, is if you don't feel well, call work and say, hey, I'm not feeling good.
But
not saying call in sick, but let them know. What do you want me to do? You know, if you got the sniffles or a little cough.
Right.
The common cold is still out there.
Of course.
And God forbid if you get it because, you know, it's like hoof and mouth disease or something like that.
Normal flu.
Exactly.
You're going to get it.
Right.
But that's the case for everything. If you don't feel well, don't go to work.
Yeah, don't spread it on. And, you know,
the rest of us.
I grew up in the era of if you're not dead, you can work. Go to work. And I apologize to every officer I ever worked with, but there was nights I drug myself into work that I shouldn't have been there.
Sure.
But, you know, my work ethic told me I have to go. And, yeah, I had sick days to use, but that it didn't even dawn on me.
Well. You know?
And that's what we did.
You're
and everybody did it.
Right.
You know, but now things have changed, and I think for the better, because sick days are there for a reason. If you're not feeling well, call your bosses and, hey, I'm feeling off today. I'd like to use a sick day just so, you know, not to spread anything around. And I don't think they'll have an issue with that.
Yeah, you should always err on the side of caution for that.
Definitely.
But, that's for anything. If you feel like you have strep throat, if you feel like you have a sinus infection, I mean, there's a lot of these things that they say you can't spread. But, you know, there's side effects that could spread. I mean, you never know. It's just always err on the side of caution. Okay. But you would do that. It doesn't have anything to do with COVID. I would have said that 5 years ago. As a matter of fact, I have said that all of the time.
Yeah, and that's where we would have disagreed because, you know what, if you're able to get up and move around, go to work. You have a job.
If you
go
can
to work
manage
and fulfill your
symptoms. Your
job. Right.
Don't come to work if you're going to throw up all day. Don't come to work if you're going to hack and sneeze on everybody.
But like I said, that used to be my attitude of I can go to work, I'm going to work. But it is way smarter. You know, if you're not feeling well, don't go in and pass it on to other people.
No.
That's definitely a common sense thing that I was incapable of pulling off years ago.
You know, if we ran the world.
I'd like to think it would be better.
Well,
but.
I don't know. Anyway.
Yes, moving on.
All right, let's see. So next week is when gun season starts. Next Saturday.
Next Saturday.
The 20th.
Correct.
All right. So you're going to do the show from the tree stand, or is this when
I can either do it from the tree stand, or I can just come back and do it and go back up.
All right. We'll talk about it.
Whatever the needs of WLKG are, I'm there for you.
Sure. You're crazy.
I'll call in for my deer stand. I'm good with that.
Well, that'll chase the deer away because you'd have to talk. Aren't you just supposed to not talk?
Well, maybe they like the show. Maybe they'll hang out until we're done. Just if you hear a loud bang, understand I'll be off air for a little bit.
my God. Live on Life Matters.
Hang on a second. Okay, I'm back.
Oh, my God. That's funny. We should do that live from the deer stand.
Okay.
No.
I got signal out there.
Oh, brother.
I listen to Packer games. I listen to Badger games in the past. I text.
Anyway, this has been fun.
As always.
Thanks to Tom Gardner for coming in and talking to us a little bit about the legal stuff. And we'll see you next week.
Yes, right
here.
You will.
Yes, same time, same place right here on Lake 96.1.